Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 412 for comics originally released on July 1st, 2015. Now, we're recording this early, so what that means is we are changing things up yet again, going back to that three non-Marvel DC comics. We got some good feedback on that. So, starting us off in Dark Horse, actually, is Barbed Wire number 1. Now, this is a property that originally came out as part of the Comics Greatest World stuff back, I think, in the 90s. I could be wrong on that. I didn't actually look up when the original Barbed Wire came out.
Yeah, I think it was early 90s.
Did you read any of that stuff?
Yeah, I think I remember reading that one.
I read, I think, most of it, if not all of it. Some of the later stuff when it went away and then came back, I don't think I necessarily read. I have not seen the movie. I might have a copy of it downstairs. I'm not sure, actually. This is one I was curious about, and, you know, we needed to record early. There were a couple of good non-Marvel DC books this week, so it's like, okay, let's you know, we'll go with this one. I thought this was a pretty good reinvention of the material, and that it stayed true to kind of the core concept of Barbed Wire as a bounty hunter and that sort of a thing. Dropped the whole Comics Greatest World kind of setting of Arcadia and all the other craziness that was associated with that. And just kind of took it from a clean slate for a modern audience, because, of course, the world has radically changed in the last 20 years. It really hasn't. But what I liked is they played it straight. They toned down the cheesecake factor. Wasn't as campy. But it was very much, again, what it was. So, I mean, if you're looking for, you know, high literature, that's not what this is trying to be. It's a fun read, though, and it tells a good story, and I thought it covered enough ground in the first issue and set the scene, set the tone, set the style that I was pleased with it as a first issue. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was it did cover a lot of ground in a short amount of time. She's got a reality series, it seems, and so that's an interesting angle. There doesn't seem to be any money from that reality series because she's having trouble with her bar, and there's some rival gangs that seem to hang out in her bar, and she lets this happen, and it seems crazy to do so, but I guess maybe she doesn't have a choice. I'm not really sure what the appeal is there with them. I thought the what was the bearded guy's name? It escapes me now. Well, Wyvern Stormblood. That was...
Why not Vern Stormblood? I mean, no. That was a really bad pun they had in there. Or not even a pun. I'm not even sure what that was.
And so, yeah, that kind of came out of nowhere. That character did. And I thought, okay, what is this thing going to be? And I'm not really sure exactly what this is going to be. But yeah, she seems somewhat likable, you know, striving to keep her business afloat, and she's a tough bounty hunter, and she doesn't take a lot of guff, and so that was a positive thing. I thought the art was really good. I don't know if I'm going to read another one though. It was just okay, and but I mean there was some good stuff in it.
That's the thing, is it's fun, it's entertaining, it's not brilliant, it's not, again, high literature, whatever. It's solid art, and I liked, again, how it was good in telling the story, but not kind of classic good girl art, which is what I think the series of the property had fallen into kind of before. This actually had, you know, a decent amount of story. Again, it's not brilliant, but it passes the time. It's kind of a roller coaster ride sort of story in my mind. Of it's fun while you read it, but yeah, if you stop and think too much about it, like, where, if she's doing this reality show, why isn't she getting money? She's got the bar. Why is she letting all these hooligans hang out there if she knows they're just going to trash the place? You know, there's some internal logic there that just doesn't quite work, but it makes for an entertaining read, and has some potential. I'm going to keep with it for a couple of more issues just to see where it goes. this isn't something that I think is going to stay on my list for the long term. It's just not that deep. But they did a good job with this, and I think anyone who liked the original, they'll probably like this, unless they were going strictly for the cheesecake kind of factor. And if they didn't like the execution of the original stuff, but the basic concept such as it is, I mean, she's a bounty hunter, or a bail bondsman, or, you know, whatever. If the concept works, I mean, somebody might want to check this out. It's not something I feel somebody absolutely has to go hunt down and check out, but it was very competently told, very entertaining, and it's better than a lot of other stuff on the rack, but that says more about some of the other stuff on the rack than anything else. I mean, seriously, if you had to pick between this and, say, it had come out a month earlier and it was this or Convergence.
No contest. It's barbed wire for me. But there's just a couple things, and, you know, you just chalk this up to, it's not that big of a deal. It's just a nitpick. But when we first get introduced to her, and her, she has an assistant in the bar of some sort, you know, they're talking about, you know, how packed it is. We're running out of scotch, and business is great. We're trending, and you know how awesome business is. And then we go in later in the issue, and she's got stacks and stacks of past due bills that aren't being paid. So something doesn't jive there. Either the money isn't making its way to where it's supposed to, or something else. I'm not sure what's going on there. And then there was like a one panel with her brother. She has a blind brother, and just on screen for a second and then gone. And I'm kind of curious as to what's that about, you know, what's going on there.
I think some of that's a holdover from the original stuff, but why bring it in and then not do much with it or really do anything with it? I'm curious what the bigger picture is, and is some of this going to pay off in later issues? But you're right about the business is killing it, yet she can't pay the bills. It's confusing.
But like you said, it's not high art, so don't go in. I guess don't worry about that sort of thing. It did have some fun fight scenes. A lot of fun fight scenes, actually.
Yeah, it had some good action. I mean, it's I'm trying to think what would be a good comparison type property to this. It's, you know, like a primetime action adventure. It's not too deep. It's not heavy on the plot or even the characterization, but it's fun, it's entertaining, it's light entertainment. And there's nothing wrong with that.
She reminded me of Red Sonja, only you know, not in medieval times. But her characterization is kind of like a Red Sonja character. Very strong, very take charge, tough. I like, you know, that was appealing.
Okay, I hadn't really made that association, but I can kind of see that. I mean, she's a strong female character without being, you know, overly aggressive or over the top, or, you know what I mean, anything. She seems believable, and that was something I think the character was lacking in its original incarnation.
Yeah, and she didn't fall into bed with somebody in the first issue, and, you know, didn't really need any kind of man relationship or anything. So it's just her. And that was kind of interesting. I was surprised that they didn't go for that.
Well, and they show she's good in a fight, but she's not invincible. You know, she gets thrown around, stuff like that. So again, it ramped it back to a more believable level than original and stuff. So it's fun, it's entertaining. It is what it is. It stayed true to itself, but it's something that I think a lot of people would just look at, remember the original, chuckle, and move on. And I think it's a little better than that. For me, it was a solid B. It was, I think, better than average in the amount of story, the setup, and what they did. The art, really solid, and I think they did a good job on the storytelling.
Yeah, I thought it was a B-, but there just wasn't enough there for me. Although I, you know, had some good things to hang my hat on, there wasn't enough for me to say, this is something I need to read next month. I won't miss this one.
I can understand that. I've pre-ordered the other ones, so that's a lot of it. It's certainly, you know, entertaining enough that, yeah, I'll keep with it. But it's also one of those that there are other things I would hang on to, you know, much longer than I would hang on to this. But other things I'd cut first, too, you know. So Section 8 is the first thing that comes to mind. Shall we move on to our next book?
Yeah, Dynamite.
This is Will Eisner's The Spirit, number one, from Dynamite Entertainment. And of course, The Spirit is, you know, a seminal work. The Eisners are called the Eisners because of Will Eisner. And The Spirit is a long-running property. We've got Matt Wagner doing the writing. We've got Dan I'm not even sure how to pronounce that. Schade? We'll go with Schade.
It's something like that. Schade, yeah.
And this is one that I pre-ordered this. We're doing all this off review PDF copies, but I do have this one coming. And I got it based on, okay, it's Matt Wagner, it's The Spirit, it's you know, I want to check it out. And I'm glad I checked it out. I'm also very glad I didn't pre-order copies after the first. This is, I mean, I'm not a huge Spirit fan, so it doesn't have really the nostalgia thing going or anything. And, I mean, I've checked some of the stuff out over the years, whatever, but I have a passing familiarity with the property. The art style was a lot more cartoony or comic strip-ish than I felt really kind of, than I was expecting or kind of worked for the property. And I thought it was a great issue if you were interested in the supporting cast of The Spirit. It's been 2 years since he's been thought dead. He hasn't been seen. And we get to see, you know, the commissioner. We get to see, you know, Ellen Dolan and other people kind of reacting to, you know, is he dead? Is he not? What's going on? All this kind of stuff. There was just one little thing I thought it was kind of missing, which is
the Spirit.
Yeah, Will Eisner's Spirit. You know, it's neither Will Eisner nor the Spirit. Literally not in the issue. And it's like, it's his title. I think it's a reasonable expectation to see him in it. I was really frustrated by that and very disappointed with that, and I thought it was a very bad move for a first issue.
It was an interesting art style. It was like a Dick Tracy comic strip. The characters were either drawn incredibly old or incredibly young. And there didn't seem to be, it didn't seem to be the right age. Some of the like the news reporter in the very beginning, he seemed way too young to be a news reporter. And now the two sidekicks, detectives, they might be young historically. They might be very young, but they seemed way too young to have their own detective agency. And it's just the way they were drawn. They seemed incredibly youthful.
Well, they certainly seem to need to be driving a car.
Yeah. So that was weird and just kind of took me out of the story. And I thought, well, maybe that's just something I'm missing from The Spirit. Maybe that's how those characters are. They're just kids that are actually his helpers or something. But once it got to that point, to those characters, and that was interesting. Up until that point, I didn't really enjoy much of that with the commissioner and his daughter and them talking about the missing spirit. It was kind of boring. But then when the two detectives, I don't know their names, Strunk and White, yes.
How could you miss that, given the joke they do on grammar and stuff like that?
Yeah, exactly. That should have stuck out. And I thought it picked up there. And then I kind of liked where it went and where it ended with them investigating this disappearance, and that was cool, but it was almost too little too late. I didn't care for any of the setup up to that point. I don't know exactly who all the bad guys are, and I'm not really that interested in any of the rest of the story. I'd kind of just like to fast forward and find out, you know, where he's at. Just tell me. I don't really want to read the comics to find out.
I would definitely say the bit with those two at the end was the highlight of it. The other part that I thought was good was the 3 pages we get of kind of a flashback of the Spirit's origin. And of course, he does show up there, but I mean, that's all flashback. Present day, he's nowhere to be found. That gave me a few things about his origin that I didn't know, because again, I'm not really that well versed on the character. But none of this sold me on continuing with it. You know, no. Where it left off was a good story beat, but for me, it was very much too little too late.
I mean, how many Spirit fans can there be? This audience has got to be very small.
I don't know, because, I mean, again, the Will Eisner material is To say it's highly regarded, I think, is an understatement. And I think there are fans of the spirit, but I think most of them are also fans, just by nature of it, of Will Eisner. So here we're getting the character, and we're not getting the brilliance of Will Eisner. And we're getting some very interesting pacing-type issues in terms of, again, the spirit's not in his own first issue, by and large. And I think there are a fair number of fans, but I think they skew older, and I think many of them are kind of hardcore fans. But it goes back to not only just the storytelling and the characterization that Will Eisner infused in it, but, I mean, Will Eisner was a master of the comic craft. He's written a couple of really good books on the subject that are right up there with, you know, the Scott McCloud stuff. Arguably better, depending kind of what you're looking for and stuff. But also the way Will Eisner would lay out like a splash page where the buildings would form the word the spirit or the title of the thing or whatever. He was just a great craftsman, storyteller, and all of that. And so, again, I think there's a sizable audience of fans, but are they fans of the spirit?
They're not going to get that.
Well, they're not going to get any of that in this.
Yeah.
Because not only is the spirit not really in here, the Will Eisner-ish aspects didn't really seem to be in there, for me at least. So I think there are going to be a lot of fans of the spirit that see this, that like it, have the nostalgia with the character that carries them through this issue into the others, and maybe it grows. Certainly, I think Matt Wagner has some fans in and of himself. But anyone who says, wow, I've heard great things about the spirit, I ought to check this out, and then reads this, they're going to be left thinking, well, what's the big deal? But again, it's when people say that, exactly. They're talking the Will Eisner stuff.
Yeah, I often worry about books like this and the pulp characters, the Phantom, and some of those other era comics. I mean, there's got to be a dwindling audience for those that are aging out, that are interested in those titles. And they trot them out all over and over and over again.
But every time they bring them back out, they can get a new audience. You know, this is not the first time the spirits come back. I mean, Kitchen Sink did quite a bit with the character. Doc Savage is another example of the, you know, pulp kind of a character. Dynamite's done some good stuff with him. DC did some good stuff with him. So it's not that there's just that original batch of fans. I think that's the hardcore and the core audience. But I can see how there are people that are much younger that have gotten into the spirit either through reprints of the Will Eisner stuff or through later work.
I'll have to try to remember to leave a question for the July Mayo report to compare the launch of the spirit with past volumes and how it's done over time. I'd be curious.
I'd be curious about that. Definitely put a message, a post on the forum just to remind me. And
in August.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is in September, when we got a second issue to compare, how many people read this and potentially bailed? And will that even necessarily get reflected in the second issue numbers or not? Or will it take a few more? How long does this title last? You know, both in terms of popularity and stuff, and also Dynamite sometimes just does a, you know, couple issues, you know, 6-8 issues, and then restarts a title or something. Which kind of is what got me off of Flash Gordon. Another one of these older characters that has gotten, you know, I don't say rejuvenated, but multiple sets of audiences based on when it's been trotted back out and how those things did.
Well, you had mentioned Green Hornet, too, where it was getting some traction, and all of a sudden there were, you know, four or five different Green Hornets that were all coming out in different continuities, and, you know, they just buried it.
That's something, though, I think the spirit really just has kind of the iconic stuff. So it's not like it's got the convolutedness of a modern-day Green Hornet and Kato versus a classic or a generation back, or, you know, is Kato Japanese, Korean, Chinese, or whatever. That Dynamite just really mishandled. For me, this really didn't work. It had moments that I really enjoyed, but few and far between. I would have been happy if I'd just gotten the 3 pages of the flashback of his origin. So I'm going to go with a C+. I hope other people enjoyed it more, but I was expecting more action, more adventure, and certainly more of Will Eisner's The Spirit in this issue.
Yeah, I think that's okay to assume that, given the title. I thought this took way too long to get going and to get any traction at all. And yeah, it was lacking in a lot of areas for me, so I gave it a C minus.
I can definitely understand that. To me, it was a definite, you know, kind of a swing and a miss with moments of promise. But I don't know how well it's going to get received and how much of it's just going to be, you know, people who would have bought it regardless of how it did.
And it seems like there's less and less folks out there that give things chances to breathe and chances to find their footing. If you don't latch on to a reader who samples your book with issue one, if you don't do something to dig your hooks into them, they're gone. There's less and less folks that will stay in for three, four, the first arc anymore.
Oh, absolutely, and nor should they.
It just doesn't happen like that.
If they're not being entertained, they should move on. And that's why I was really disappointed with that issue of it seemed very reasonable to expect the spirit, the title character, to show up. And I could see a lot of people, they didn't get that. They're not coming back. And again, I'm one of them. So it's too competitive of a market not to come out with your A game. And this was not their A game.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to our final book of the week?
Yes.
This is We Stand on Guard, number one, from Image Comics. It's written by Brian K. Vaughan. We've got Steve Scrosi on art. And this is a $2.99 book. It's got an additional page count, somewhere around 38 pages or so of story. And this is a comic where really, I mean, they started from a blank slate. They had a interesting kind of a concept. And the story started kind of where I felt it should start. It was a logical starting point. There was an aspect of me with the opening scene where I'm thinking, okay, this is kind of interesting. And then, wow, that happened. And, okay, where are we going next? And then I see where they're going. It's like, ah, this is giving key backstory for one of the characters. It's leading here. It's setting the groundwork. Because it's one of those, get a scene, roll forward a dozen years, see how things had played out. And I'm not always a huge fan of that approach. It seems like a little bit of a writing crutch at times, but the initial scene really set the stage in terms of where technology was at, where society was at, how certain characters thought certain things were going to be viewed and whatnot. And there was an aspect that was very Canadian about both the beginning and later parts of it, and also very American. And given the story is, you know, we think the Canadians did something they shouldn't have, and we bombed the hell out of them. It was, again, very interesting setup for the story. And the additional page count really worked in this issue's favor. I feel that I know enough about the series to get a sense of the tone, the style, the lead characters. The art was terrific. It was a solid story, an interesting concept. There was one or two things about that opening sequence that kind of stretched believability for me, but yeah, it's all part of the premise, so I'll just take it and move forward.
You wouldn't think that if Canada bombed the White House, we would retaliate?
No, that I totally believe.
Oh, okay.
It was Mom and Dad, and the fact...
Oh, yeah.
There's a thing or two there. I mean, I think if Canada attacked the U.S. and bombed the White House with a drone strike or whatever is the premise here, I don't think there would be anything left of Canada. They're within 100 miles of our border at the furthest. We would just carpet bomb. I mean, I have nothing against Canada. Well, I take it back. I've spent enough time in Canada. I've got a little against a couple of Canadians, but that's nothing about Canada. Parts of it are awesome.
There was some very, very stylized way that the bombs were dropped that are probably not realistic and rooted in reality, the way the missiles were flying through the air. That was a little weird.
It's like suddenly it's raining missiles literally, and they're just all over the place. And it's like, if that's happening, you're not getting hit by one missile blast, you're getting hit by like dozens.
And you're probably not going to just see them all coming and leisurely pace and be able to kind of react.
Yeah, by the time you realize they're coming out from the cloud cover and stuff, you're already dead.
But after that start, the way, you know, I could see what he was doing, you know, setting us up and kind of laying the groundwork.
Mm-hmm.
I was mesmerized from there on.
Oh, yeah.
I was fascinated by this this girl as a young adult, later in life as a soldier of sorts, and this battle against across the borders, and this ragtag group that got back together or that she joined the two four.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she's searching for her brother. There's just a lot of stuff to hang your hat on, and there was plenty of room in this story to explore a lot of things, plus to have some great action. And this Steve Scrosi is amazing. His art is fantastic. I don't know him at all. So I'm going to have to look him up and kind of see where he comes from, because his stuff is great. Yeah, this was a really cool debut. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the art was terrific. Amber is very clearly getting used as kind of an intro character into the events. We're seeing kind of the backstory through her eyes, and she's very much the introduction for us, the reader, to the 2-4, which are just a fun group of characters, a very interesting, eclectic group. And there's a scene there where one of them, Booth, is tending to one of her wounds, giving a little bit of kind of the Canadian versus American, you know, stuff going on. And he's making his point, and then right behind him, big monster U.S. mech.
That was great.
And it's one of those, it was awesome, but it's also, okay, things aren't going to end well for him. But then there's a little bit of a fake out, because, I mean, you would expect the next panel would be the missile coming out of the robot and this guy just getting poofed. You know, he's toast. He's done. So there's a little bit of Brian K. Vaughan just kind of toying with us, but that's his job as the writer. This had a really strong introduction to these characters, both in terms of personalities, but then we get to see them in action. And it's like, okay, they're a force to be reckoned with. This is cool. This is fun. I thought this story not only started where it needed to, it ended where it kind of needed to, and they didn't waste time. They didn't waste space. They had the room they needed. I'm really sold on the series. It's action-packed. It's fun. It's got great art and a solid story. And Brian K. Vaughan is going to deliver. I know this. So, I mean, he's got the track record. Again, the artist, I want to know what else this artist has done. I haven't had time to look that up. I'm along for the ride. This will stay on my list for a while.
And he has such a track record of non-Big Two stuff. I'm not as familiar with the stuff that Brian K. Vaughan's done for Marvel and DC. He has a Runaways run that I've not completed, so I've never read it yet until I don't have all the issues. I'm not sure what else he's done over for the Big Two, but man, his stuff, his Vertigo and the Ex Machina, and he teamed with Pia Guerra on art for Why the Last Man. He's killing it with Fiona Staples on Saga. He can find artists that really take his stories and translate really, really well.
He finds the right artist for the story.
Yeah.
The right story for the artist. Take your pick.
And I love the fact that he has the luxury of he can keep his comics at $2.99 because he's going to sell 50,000 of them. He can do a double-sized first issue, and because he wants a good strong introduction, and he has that luxury to be able to do that because he's going to sell 50,000 of them.
Well,
so there's money built into that. He doesn't have to worry about making his money in that single issue as much. He can actually take the time to give a nice big oversized issue, keep the price down, and get it in as many hands as possible. And that's awesome that he can do that. It really works. It's a really nice package for $2.99.
Absolutely. And it's not so much that he has that luxury, but he's built up the reputation and stuff that he's able to do that. He's earned that right, so to speak. And this is something that not only do I think it's going to do well in terms of comic sales, but there's an aspect here that kind of sort of reminds me in broad brushstrokes of Falling Skies on, what is that, TNT, FX, whichever channel that's on. This is the sort of thing that as that show wraps up, if they wanted to do another kind of a war combat futuristic kind of a deal, this would be perfect material to translate to TV. You know, it's fun, it's action-adventure, it's cool characters. And it's not like, oh, well, he's doing a TV pitch. No, it's just a really good story that I'd like to see more of in live action, too.
Well, I think that what I mean by he has the luxury is because he has such a reputation, he has earned it,
mm-hmm.
that he's going to sell. He's got that economy of scale built into his debuts and his comics. They're going to sell incredibly well. It's a lot harder for someone who may only sell 5,000 copies of their first issue for us to say, man, I really wish they would have put a double-sized issue out. I wish it wasn't $3.99. I wish it was $2.99. You know, it's a lot harder for those guys.
Oh, it's to do that. Absolutely. Absolutely. This is one where the industry is favoring the already successful. Because he's been successful, because he's got other projects going on, he's able to either take a little bit of a loss or whatever on this issue, knowing if he really knocks it out of the park with the first issue, and I think he did, or they did, it's a team effort here, of course, that pays off later. So you're right, an up-and-coming creator or creative team, they don't have that option by and large. You know, even if they could get Image to say, yeah, you can do 40 pages or whatever, do they have the time and the resources to get that much art put together? Can they, you know, get the whole package going? Some of these people are doing it in their spare time or whatever. He's doing it full time. And again, able to get the right artists, get the right package, get the whole thing put together. I'm looking forward to this doing really well for Image, and hopefully it does.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really great debut. Not quite the A+ for me, but I gave it a solid A. I really liked it, and I'm coming back for more and more and more.
Same here. Solid A, not quite the A+. One or two things that just hit some hot buttons items for me. A little bit of gory at the beginning and stuff, but great stuff. Solid first issue. Again, I'm glad it got the 40 pages to make that happen. And the $2.99 price point, I think, gets it in more hands. This is something well worth checking out. It's a lot of fun and has a lot of potential moving forward. So,
and he has yet another series coming up later in the year, Brian K. Vaughan does, that I think centers around Paper Girls. And, you know, I'll check it out. You know, he has not steered me wrong, so I'll be there.
Yeah, no, certainly he's got a good track record of delivering, so his stuff gets the benefit of the doubt if it's a property or premise I'm interested in.
One of his titles that is probably his least well received is Pride of Baghdad, which was an OGN.
I've got that. I haven't read that yet.
And I think it's really good. I think it was wonderful. I think the main criticism is it's a little heavy handed, but. I enjoyed it. It played me like a fiddle emotionally, so I enjoyed every minute of it. And that's one of his least acclaimed titles, and I think it was great.
Yeah, at some point I need to read that. I've also got the hardcovers of Why the Last Man, but haven't read those either. And I didn't pick that up when it was in issues.
I enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that series. That was really my gateway to him, was Why the Last Man.
No, he's very talented, and again, good track record. If you see his name on a trade or whatever, it's at least worth picking up and seeing if the premise is of interest to you. So, as we are recording this, this is obviously early, so I haven't read anything else that's come out this week.
Nope.
So, we're actually recording this before I head to San Diego, so I've still got a pack for that, actually. So, hopefully, I mean, this will go up by the time this goes up, San Diego will be over. Hopefully it's been a great convention, a lot of cool things in terms of news and stuff coming out. I am planning on recording with my sister throughout the convention, putting that up afterwards. Last year that was 2 episodes. I'm expecting it'll be that way this time too. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. The panel, again, this goes up the Monday after con. The podcasting panel will have been Saturday. This whole time travel thing's confusing. I'll try to get that up for the Wednesday episode. So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That's awesome. That'll do it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Red Hood Arsenal number 2 from DC, Star Wars Lando number 1 from Marvel, and Star Trek Green Lantern number 1 from IDW.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.